Chapter 12.
Warning for sexual assault. Styles is somewhat dreading school, but it's quieter than expected because Jackson is out sick. Styles isn't terribly surprised, given how he had looked the day before. Jackson is pushing himself hard, and it's catching up with him. Since he's out, they take the opportunity to break into his locker. Styles is thinking that they can steal something of his and maybe find a way to use it to bind his power from a distance. Unfortunately, the locker is completely empty. Stone was ahead of them on that score. Lacrosse practice is fun, because without Jackson there, Styles gets to show off a little. When it's over, he finds that he's received a rather cryptic text from his father.
Please come by the station. Bring Derek, not Jack.
He frowns at this message for a minute, then shrugs and relays the message to Derek. Scott and Isaac decide to go back to Scott's and get a start on their homework. Scott has to make up the anatomy test during his lunch period the next day. Sandy's obviously expecting them. She looks up when they come in and says, "Hey, Styles." And then, in a slightly flirtatious tone, "Hi, Derek." Since Derek hangs out with Styles, she's seen him fairly frequently. They all seem under the impression that Sheriff Stalinski has sort of adopted Derek like a lost puppy, and that it's good for Styles to have an older brother figure around. Someone who can look out for him, since the sheriff works so much. Styles is just glad that people at the station haven't presumed they're dating, as he's very sure this would lead to lectures about the dangers of taking up with older men. However, this gives Sandy and a few other female officers license to hit on Derek as they choose. He usually responds with aloof politeness, which is about as much as anyone can expect from him. Naturally, this just encourages them. "Your dad's in his office," she says, and Styles thanks her and jogs down the hallway. Stalinski looks up as they come in.
"Hey, shut the door behind you," he says.
"Uh-oh,"
Styles says, and does so.
"What's up?"
His father heaves a sigh. Harris has filed a complaint. He seems to think that Derek has been threatening him.
Derek rolls his eyes.
"Yes, me and my oh-so-intimidating flip-flops had a chat with him yesterday."
Sheriff Stalinski looks somewhat amused despite himself.
"Dare I ask what was discussed in this little chat?"
"Sure,"
Derek says with a shrug. "He's been following Styles around the school and making subtle comments about how he'd hate to see his service dog get put down. I told him to knock it off."
At this, Stalinski snaps to attention. He looks at Styles, who is suddenly extremely interested in his fingernails.
"Is that true, Styles?"
"Yeah, well, kinda," Styles says. His father looks unimpressed. He lets out a breath.
"Yeah, he's always in the hallway wherever I am. And the other day he reminded me about the behavioral evaluation, saying that he'd hate to see anything happen to the dog."
It's an obvious effort for Sheriff Stalinski to keep his temper.
"One of these days I'm gonna pistol whip that little bastard," he growls. "Why the hell didn't you tell me?"
"It just seemed so stupid," Styles says. "I mean, here I am trying to pass 5 difficult academic classes and fight off a freaking warlock. It seemed like I should just be able to ignore that jerk. It's not like anything would actually happen to Jack. I mean, if he did have to bite somebody or something, he might wind up at animal control, and then he would just shift to his human form, glare at the nearest passerby, and demand pants or something. And they'd all try to forget it ever happened."
"Be that as it may," Stalinski says, "what Harris is doing is harassment, and you should have told me."
"Sorry, Dad," Styles says with a sigh. Stalinski holds up his hands in surrender.
"You've had a lot to think about. Okay, Derek, did you threaten Harris?"
"Not in the manner he means it," Derek says. "I told him to leave Styles alone, or I would get lawyers involved and take him to court over it."
I hope you mean that, because the way it's shaping up, we very well might have to. Stilinski says, as much as this bastard isn't worth our time.
But you have to investigate, Stiles says, and both of the men blink at him. He blinks back.
Don't you see? That's his play. He knows that you'll talk to Derek, that Derek will tell you what happened, and then you'll write the whole thing off. Then he'll go to the press or the DA and say, I filed this complaint about Derek Hale threatening me, but the sheriff ignored me. He plays favorites. He can't be trusted to execute the duties of his office.
Shit. Stilinski rubs his hands over his face. And of course, it's an election year.
Is anyone else actually running? Derek asks.
Not so far, Stilinski says. I've run unopposed the last two elections, but that doesn't mean that someone won't step up if they smell blood in the water.
He sighs. Okay, we'll investigate fair and square. Derek, I'm going to have Carmichael interview you. It's better if someone other than me does it.
We have the conversation recorded, Stiles says.
Now, why does that not surprise me?
Stilinski asks, amused again.
Maybe I'll arrest him for filing a false report.
Stiles just shakes his head and says, I thought he wasn't worth our time.
Son, Stilinski says, I want you to imagine something for a moment. Let's just pretend that the whole werewolf thing wasn't true. That you had been...
Seeing that his father was having trouble finishing the sentence, Stiles says,
assaulted in a more believable fashion?
Sure, Stilinski says. He has to swallow hard before he can continue.
And that you'd gotten an actual service dog to help with your PTSD. Do you see Harris in this imaginary world acting any differently than he is right now?
No, Stiles admits.
No, Stilinski agrees. Only you'd be less able to defend yourself. So, we're going to take this exactly as far as we need to, whether Harris is worth it or not. Let me talk to Carmichael, and send me that recording that you have.
Stiles sighs and does so. It just seems so stupid to be focusing on this when he's got so many bigger problems. He's beginning to think that maybe they can try to break into Jackson's house and take something that belongs to him. Lydia would know what's meaningful. If they get caught, well, that's a less problematic prank than trying to physically abduct him. They could say that they were playing a joke. Of course, that would only work if anything has meaning to Jackson, which Stiles sort of doubts. He wonders if they can steal his car. Things are quiet over the weekend. Stiles decides to go back to the office building and see if it looks like Stone is staying there, or if he's moved again. The place is empty. Same old dusty furniture on the first floor, and the second floor has been cleaned out. His father is monitoring the credit card for activity, and there's been none. That doesn't bother Stiles too much. If Stone gets a new credit card, that will be flagged as well. If he's laid in enough cash to last him a while, however, that could be a problem. Without any better ideas, he decides that they should at least give a stab at talking to Jackson. There's an infinitesimal chance that it will work, and he'll feel stupid if there's such an easy solution and they don't take it. But he knows that he had better not be involved, given how much Jackson hates his ass. So he sends Scott and Allison to talk to him. Jackson likes Allison, historically at least, and Scott did save his ass once, so that might theoretically win him some points. But the talk goes about as well as Stiles had expected. Jackson just blows them off and says that they're jealous because he can finally do something that they can't. He also makes several comments about paying them back for everything they've done to him. Stiles grinds his teeth and tries to pretend that Jackson doesn't exist. He's feeling less and less sympathy for the other teenager by the moment. It's getting to the point where, if Jackson loses his soul to black magic, he won't particularly care. He has a feeling that Derek shares this opinion, even if nobody else does. Allison can be practical, but at heart she's a kind person. And of course, Scott's moral compass is the stuff of legend. Lydia doesn't seem to see Jackson clearly, and the idea of him suffering upsets her even though she won't admit it. Isaac and Boy don't have the same solid confidence that would enable them to make life-or-death decisions yet. Erica is the only other pack member who seems to share Styles and Derek's "so what if Jackson takes a long walk off a short pier" sentiment. Styles poses the idea of stealing something of Jackson's, but the others are quick to point out that they wouldn't know what to do with it. Even if Styles was able to muster up the necessary belief to do a spell, he doesn't know any, and it's pretty clear that self-taught magic is a good way to blow himself up. Scott very much doubts that Deaton would be willing to actually cast on Jackson for them, since he seems to know all about magic, but doesn't do much of it himself. Styles is forced to reluctantly agree. Everyone is sick of the buddy rule. Styles' physics grade has dropped from an A- to a B, and in short, the whole thing has him pissed off. Wednesdays and Fridays are the days without lacrosse practice, so he decides to do his shopping after school. He's gotten a new little vest for Derek that he can attach the leash to, so he won't have to wear a collar anymore. This is good, because every time he shifted back and was standing there naked except for a collar, Styles couldn't look at him without laughing. The two of them hit up the grocery store. Derek helpfully adds some things to the cart, and the pharmacy for a refill on his Adderall before heading back to Derek's. When he gets back, Scott and Allison are doing their homework while Erica channel surfs on TV. "If that's Jersey Shore, you're out of the pack," Styles calls over to her as he sets the groceries down. "Where are the others?" "Isaac and Boyd went back to his place to do Boyd stuff," Scott says, a little distractedly, as he works through a difficult algebra problem. "Okay, what about Lydia?" At this, Scott's head jerks up. Allison and Erica both look over as well. "She's not with you?" "What? No," Styles says. "Why would she be with me? I thought she was going to come back here with you guys." "She texted me," Allison says, pulling out her phone, "saying she was going to go with you because she needed a couple of things at the store. It was just after the last bell rang." "Son of a bitch," Styles says. He grabs his phone and dials Lydia. It immediately goes to her voicemail. "Okay, this is bad," he says, trying to stay calm. "It can't be as bad as it seems. He hasn't felt any distress or pain down the bond. Although he supposes it can't be trusted. Just because Stone won't try the same trick twice doesn't necessarily mean that Jackson wouldn't." He pulls out his laptop and starts typing rapidly. They all use a shared password to their phone now, so any of them can be looked up remotely if they go missing. But Lydia's doesn't come up. It's not turned on. "We'll track her by scent," he decides. There's no time to waste dicking around. "Derek, Erica, you're with me. Allison, Scott, you two stay here in case she shows up. Call me if you hear from her. And call Isaac and Boyd. Tell them I want them back here ASAP." "Okay, I'll..." Scott starts, but he's interrupted as Styles' phone rings. He looks down at it, hoping that it's Lydia, but it's not. The number is familiar, but not entered into his phone with a name. He jabs the accept button and forgoes his usual creative greetings. "Hello?" "Hey, Styles?" The voice is likewise familiar, but it takes Styles a moment to place that it's Danny. "Hey, Danny, what's up?" he says, trying to keep the impatience out of his voice. "Look, I think you might want to come pick Lydia up." "Lydia's with you?" Styles asks, startled. All the other pack members look over at him, similarly taken aback. "Yeah, well, sorta," Danny amends. "I came over to Jackson's. We were going to study for that big history exam we have tomorrow. Only Lydia's here and they were kinda..." "Look, you'd better just come get her, okay?" "I'll be right over," Styles says. Explanations can wait. He hangs up and says, "Change of plans. Lydia's at Jackson's, and whatever's going on there, Danny's worried enough that he called me to come and get her. Same groups, we'll be back in a bit." He grabs his keys and runs out to the Jeep with Erica jogging behind him, and Derek, who had never bothered to shift back, trotting at his feet. It takes about 15 minutes to reach Jackson's, by which point his anxiety level is reaching new highs. He doesn't bother knocking, and he doesn't care if any parents are home. What he sees causes him to nearly hit the roof. Lydia's sitting on one end of the sofa, shirtless, although her bra is still on. The skirt she's wearing has a zipper on the side, which has been pulled down. She's staring somewhat vacantly into space. Jackson is sitting on the other end of the sofa, with about 3 feet of space between them. He's wearing only boxer shorts and a magnificent sulking expression. There's a blatant hickey on the side of Lydia's neck, and nail marks on Jackson's back. "What the fuck?" Stiles snarls out. Danny, who's been standing behind the sofa as if ready to physically jump in if anything starts to happen, says,
"Yeah, like I said, came over to help Jackson study, found them rounding second and thought..."
"Why the fuck is it so weird?" Jackson snaps. "So we were making out." Danny gives him a light smack upside the head and confides, reluctantly,
"She seems really spacey. Out of it. I'm worried that..."
"That he slipped her the Mickey?" Stiles says, since Danny obviously can't quite bring himself to make the actual accusation. Danny winces, but doesn't protest. "What the ever fuck, assholes?" Jackson retorts. "You just can't handle the fact that she still wants to be with me."
Stiles decides to ignore Jackson, since the only viable alternative is kicking the shit out of him. As much as it would be deeply satisfying, he doesn't think it would be a good idea. He doesn't know what sort of abilities Jackson has gained. In a fight, Lydia won't be able to defend herself right now, to say nothing of Danny. So instead, he kneels down in front of Lydia. "Lydia, look at me," he says. She blinks dazedly at him.
"Hey, you," he says gently. "How are you feeling?"
"Very floaty,"
Lydia says, her tone dreamy.
"It's nice. You should try it."
"Maybe in my next life," Stiles says. "Come on, babe. We're gonna get you home." He stands up, and then, much to Danny's surprise, picks Lydia up in a princess carry. She's small for a girl, but still has to weigh at least 120 pounds. Stiles starts towards the door, then looks at Danny and says, "Thanks for calling me." Then he looks at Erica and jerks his head towards Jackson. "Deal with him." Erica's eyes glint in a way that Danny really does not like at all, but it's hard to protest when his best friend just tried to roofie his ex-girlfriend. He watches Stiles go, and then Erica marches over to Jackson and grabs him by the chin. Jackson makes a slight noise of pain as she wrenches his head around, so he has to look at her.
"If you ever touch him again, I will put you in the hospital," Erica says, her tone flat, factual, uncompromising. "I will remove every hair from your groin using tweezers and Tabasco sauce. I will cut off your dick with an X-Acto knife. Slowly. Am I making myself clear, you disgusting little twat biter?"
"Jesus, fine, whatever," Jackson snaps at her. Erica lets him go, turns on her heel, and marches after Stiles and Lydia. Derek has lingered in the doorway to make sure Erica is safe during this confrontation, and Danny notices for the first time that the service dog has not been on a leash this entire time. He shakes his head a little as the door closes behind them. Stiles stares at the wall of Deaton's clinic. He feels like he's been living there lately. The veterinarian has been nothing but kind and concerned since their arrival, but Stiles feels like he's being a pain in the ass. Not that there was much else they could do. He has no idea what sort of magic has been worked on Lydia, and he's not eager to wait for it to wear off. Deaton took one look at Lydia and had Erica carry her down into the cellar. They're down there for nearly half an hour before they come back up. In the meantime, the rest of the pack has been called and is waiting with them.
Scott is sitting on the floor with Allison in his lap, clearly troubled. Isaac is pacing around while Boyd fidgets. Everyone stands as Deaton emerges from the cellar with the girls in tow. Lydia is walking now, but clearly a little unsteady, leaning heavily on Erica. She's pale and looks somewhat nauseous. In the fuss, her shirt got left at Jackson's, so she's wearing the button-down that Stiles had been wearing over his t-shirt, along with her skirt. Stiles rushes over to her, getting an arm around her waist, feeling an uncomfortable pang in his chest. "How are you feeling?"
"Really, really awful," she says.
Stiles hesitates. "What's the last thing you remember?" Lydia leans into his shoulder.
"The bell rang. Jackson grabbed my books. He said he wanted to talk to me about the magic. He seemed scared. He said he couldn't control it and he needed help."
She struggles to find words for a minute.
"I walked with him for a minute. He said he just wanted to talk, but he didn't know what to say."
She shakes her head a little.
"That's it. That's the last thing I remember."
Stiles is careful to keep his expression carefully schooled into neutrality, although he knows that Lydia will hear the angry thud of his heartbeat as it increases. He looks at Deaton and says, "What about the protection spell?" Deaton is quiet for a minute, then says, "Lydia, did he touch you at all?"
He put his hand on my shoulder," Lydia says. "I think. It's pretty fuzzy."
"My guess," Deaton says to Stiles, "is that he took hair off her shirt and used that to do the spell. That's really the only way he would have been able to circumvent the protection spell she's wearing. That's probably why he walked with her for several minutes, rather than doing the enchantment right away." Stiles rubs his hands over his face. He looks at Lydia, feels the fine tremors that are shaking her. He steers them over to Erica, who pulls her into an embrace. Allison comes over to her other side, wrapping an arm around her. Then Stiles looks at Derek and says flatly, "I am going to kill him." Derek shifts back to his human form, shrugging out of the vest.
"We'd better be careful about how we do it," he says.
"Guys,"
Allison protests, albeit somewhat weakly, "it's a little more complicated than that, I think."
"No,"
Stiles says. He suspects he should be feeling fear, or shame, or something, about the fact that he's now actively planning to commit murder. But all he feels is that white-hot rage running through him.
"I really don't think it is. Damn it, Allison! You weren't there! You didn't see!"
He chokes the words off. "Do you know what would have happened if Danny hadn't happened to go over there?"
"Stiles!"
Erica says sharply, more of a snarl than anything else.
"Shut the fuck up, you stupid piece of shit!"
That startles him. Erica can almost always be counted on to side with him. Then he tracks her gaze to Lydia, who's pale and shaking, and realizes what an insensitive clod he's being. He swears under his breath.
"Christ, I'm sorry," he mutters.
"It just..." Derek gets an arm around his waist.
"We can talk about this later,"
he says, his voice deceptively calm.
"Right now, we should get Lydia back home."
Somewhat grudgingly, he adds,
"Thank you for your help, Dr. Deaton."
They go to Scott's house. Stiles doesn't want Lydia to feel crowded right now, and Derek's apartment always makes him feel somewhat sardine in a can-ish. He also doesn't want to go home, because God forbid his father get word of what just happened. Although he personally would find it somewhat satisfying to see Jackson's sorry ass get arrested, they can't prove anything. There are no drugs in Lydia's system, and no physical evidence beyond one hickey. Jackson will claim the encounter was consensual, and the whole thing would just be too traumatizing for Lydia to bear. Scott's mother is working the evening shift, so they have the house to themselves. "You," Stiles says, steering Lydia onto the sofa, "need something chocolatey." She gives him a wan smile, clearly trying to keep herself together.
How about those triple chocolate cookies you make?
The ones that are more like brownies? Stiles says. Sure, I can do that. Presuming that the McCall house has all the ingredients, he might have to improvise. He goes into the kitchen nonetheless.
Derek hovers, but Stiles redirects him. He needs space right now, as much as Lydia does.
Derek, take the guys out back. Play some frisbee or something. Leave Lydia with Allison and Erica, okay?
Derek gives a nod and trots up the stairs to grab some of the spare clothes that he keeps at Scott's house. Then he takes the guys out into the backyard. They hesitate a little, but not very much. They seem to understand instinctively that they are not what Lydia needs right now.
Stiles finds some semi-sweet chocolate at the back of the McCall's cabinet and starts melting it in a pot on the stove. In the other room, he can hear Lydia sobbing, little phrases coming out between gasps for breath.
I never thought he would do that to me.
Stiles hears a snap and realizes that he's broken the wooden spoon he was holding in half. He takes a deep breath and carefully wipes the chocolate into the pan. He wonders if it would have been better if they hadn't told Lydia what had happened at all. Surely they could have come up with some explanation. Of course, it likely would have fallen apart once Lydia noticed the hickey.
Do you think that was him? Lydia asks, her voice trembling. I know that Deaton says the magic changes people, that it corrupts them. This couldn't have been Jackson, right?
Hysteria is seeping into her voice.
Jackson wouldn't. He would never.
Stiles pushes his hands through his hair, leaving it standing in lopsided spikes. He is suddenly, viciously aware that he has to get out of the house, that he's going to lose his temper any second, and the results are not going to be pretty. No matter what he says or does, it's only going to upset Lydia. He looks down at the half-mixed ingredients and presses a hand against his mouth to muffle the scream that's about to boil out of him. He nearly jumps out of his skin when Derek comes in from the backyard.
Come on, Derek says, in a low voice, pitched low enough that the wolves in the other room won't hear. You need to get out of here.
I told Lydia I would make cookies.
Lydia doesn't care about the cookies,
Derek says, then repeats, and you need to get out of here. Stiles swallows and fights for self-control. The dough needs to sit for a half hour before it bakes anyway.
Let me just finish mixing it real quick.
Derek scowls a little, but since Stiles seems to be holding on, he decides to allow it. He leans against the table and glowers at nothing while Stiles attacks the rest of the ingredients. A few minutes later, he helps Stiles by pouring in the melted chocolate while Stiles wields the mixer. When it's done, Stiles sets it aside. For the moment, the noise of the mixer had drowned out Lydia's crying. But as he moves the cookie dough to the counter by the stove, he hears her let out another sob of,
"How could he do that?"
And Stiles nearly drops the bowl. Derek catches it before it can hit the floor. He sets it on the counter and then takes Stiles by the shoulder and says,
"Come on, come with me."
"Shit,"
Stiles huffs out of breath and lets Derek steer him outside. They quietly close the door behind themselves. Scott, Isaac, and Boyd are standing around awkwardly in the backyard, ostensibly tossing a football around, but really just feeling as miserable as the rest of the pack. Derek peels his shirt over his head and tosses it onto the porch. He stands with his feet slightly apart in a fighting stance. Then he gestures to Stiles, a little beckoning gesture.
"Come on," he says.
"Come on what?" Stiles asks.
"You need to get rid of all this angry energy," Derek says. "So you're going to try to kill me for a bit."
He sees the doubtful look on Stiles' face and says,
"Just think of when you first met me and how much you wanted to kill me then."
Over the course of the next hour, Stiles gets knocked flat more times than he can count.
He attacks Derek over and over again, with mindless, relentless rage. He does it with bare hands, his fists and feet his only weapons. Derek takes it easy on him at first, but before long, even the werewolf is fighting to protect himself. When it becomes clear that it will take a while for Stiles to wear himself out, Boyd quietly goes inside to finish the cookies. Finally, Derek knocks him down and he doesn't get back up. He just lies on the ground, gasping, staring up at the sky, which is starting to darken. He rolls onto his side and spits blood out of his mouth. He's going to have some spectacular bruises, but he knows that Derek was careful, that most of them will be hidden. After a few minutes huddled up there, he feels Derek sit down next to him. "I couldn't protect her," he says, and now he's the one crying, no matter how much he tries to hold it back. "He took her right out from underneath all our noses, and I couldn't protect her." Derek doesn't say anything, because he knows there's nothing that he can say, that all the logic in the world won't make Stiles feel any better. He just sits there with his hand on Stiles' shoulder, waiting for the worst of it to pass.